From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of December, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll discuss the commodity markets and today's trade with Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net. I'll take a broader perspective of the marketplace with Ben Brown from MU, or Missouri University Extension, and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute there. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, with Mark Ruiz. So along the way, I'll remind you that coming up in the month of January on the 9th, 10th, and 11th, the Farm Doc team will be on the road to Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb for the annual Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You should sign up today. Don't wait, because after the holidays, things close very quickly. You'll want to get your tickets right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $4.77. That finished six lower. The May contract down 5 3/4 at 489.5. In December of next year, down 3 3/4 cents at 508.5. January beans up 11 1/4, settled $13.27. The March at $13.40, 8.5 higher. In November, beans at $12.84, up 7 3/4. Bean meal, $7.20 higher. The bean oil, 65 cents higher. Wheat futures, soft red, down 12 1/4 at $6.17. Hard red down 15 cents at $6.27 3/4. Live cattle futures, $169.62, up 27.5 cents. Feeders $1.97.5 higher for 100 pounds at $224.15. And lean hogs at $71.57, down 32.5 cents. Crude oil, 94 cents a barrel, $72.73 of the trade. Diesel fuel at $2.64.8 a gallon, about 5 cents higher. And gasoline up $0.01 at $2.16.3 per gallon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net to discuss some of these numbers and the end of the calendar year trade. Thank you, Kurt. Happy holidays to you. I appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah, glad to be here. Happy holidays and happy New Year's. It seems like Monday's going to be out here for the next 2 weeks, so I hope everybody has a safe and enjoyable 2 weeks here as we wrap up 2023.
Give me your review of the year very quickly. What's it been like in the marketplace?
Well, there's a lot of optimism starting out, of course, during the crop insurance discovery price, particularly corn, $5.90, and had a couple chances of $6 there early at the marketing season. A lot of uncertainty of that southern hemisphere. There was some bullish enthusiasm, particularly for Argentina coming through just a half a crop. But as we moved into our growing season, crop went in fairly well. We kind of lost the weather premium in our marketplace. We had a little pop there as we moved into June, July on just looking out our back door, just quite a bit of uncertainty. And probably the most remarkable thing was on the production side out in the field, just seeing the crop really struggle there, not knowing what type of production or yield we're going to have. Where I live there across from our subdivision, those soybeans were about 8 to 10 inches all summer long. And we got the rain and they took off. Same thing with corn. Corn chest high, got some rain. It actually grew another foot or two. And some of these hybrids and areas was able to come through and produce averaged above average. There's a few record production numbers in some areas. So the biggest surprise was the ability of the crop to hang in there and produce. And of course, as we moved through the marketing year, we kind of lost that weather rally. The market was just been unable to get up there. Beans, they had some ups here as we went through the marketing year. And the wheat market, particularly, too, just kind of rolled over and died. As we wrap up 2023, world events, the market just seemed numb to that Black Sea region. Then it was kind of numb to what was taking place in Israel and the Gaza Strip area. So the world news just kind of neutralized, was neutral, and there was just no enthusiasm there. But as we wrap up the 23 here, particularly here today at this recording, there's actually a little bit of uncertainty in the energy sector. With the Black Sea region is no longer a safe area to move ships or cargo ships, and some of that container market is uncertain, along with maybe some of the energy markets here, with Russia expected to cut back production on the daily scale about 50,000 barrels. So we're kind of wrapping up the year here with just a little bit of uncertainty coming back into the marketplace, Todd.
Are you concerned about the ability of shippers to move commodities around the planet as it relates both to what's happening in the Middle East, Maersk saying it's not going to move through the channels there, and along the Panama Canal, which, as we'll hear just in a bit, has entered its dry season, not likely to recover until April or May at this point?
Yeah, transportation's been a headline item here for quite some time. It, you know, actually started, here with the Mississippi draft about levels down to 9-foot loadings, and we've had some moisture here, and we've seen that come up a little bit. And plus, too, the Corps engineers have done a fantastic job doing some dredging projects to help free that up. But yeah, the Mississippi focus shifted to the Panama Canal, and who would have believed there would be an issue there? There's ideas that maybe we can get a few more ships through there, but on social media, particularly Twitter, there's been some geography maps on there showing the movement, out of the golf course, going to Asia. The quickest route would be through the canal there, then they're taking a longer route. And even the problems in the Far East there, logistics there. So we've gone from a U.S. Situational logistics to a worldwide logistic issue. And I think we've seen Asia, particularly China, pick up quite a bit of grain here, try to restock some of these reserves, particularly out of the Southern Hemisphere, to kind of avoid some issues down the road if these problems continue to persist.
It is interesting that in November, China imported more corn. It had a record corn import from across the planet, some even from the United States, I suppose.
Yeah, that was the big thing. Watch the Chinese weather maps, and there's ideas they might not have a big crop. But as they moved to GMO and better hybrids there too, they supposedly, we'll never know, squeaked out a fairly decent production number. And yet they're buying a record amount of corn, importing a record amount of corn. And, you know, at the same time, they're buying around the world to say their pork demand's poor and feed demand might not be that good. So that's been the bright spot here, is demand is probably actually better than what they're letting on, even though we've not seen the big corn demand here in the U.S. At least they're consuming or gathering inventories around the world. And not only corn, but they sneak up and buy some sorghum. And the biggest surprise was soft red winter wheat, over 2 million metric tons being purchased there. So with cheaper ocean freight until just recently here, it gave them an advantage here to go ahead and restock and reload.
Okay, thank you much.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. Ben Brown, agricultural economist with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, University of Missouri. Missouri University Extension now joins us to discuss some of the things he's been looking at as we head into the winter holiday season. Thank you. I appreciate you taking this time with us today, Ben. Let's start with exports for both corn and soybeans. What's the pace look like?
Yeah, so we've seen kind of a rally here in the last few weeks, or I'm going to extend that into a month here, of rather solid corn and soybean export shipments and sales, both. China has been a premier buyer here as of late, one of our largest buyers, and And that's positive news, I think, for both crops and our export shipments, just because that was the market that I think as we were heading into the year had the biggest question marks. You know, if it materialized, you know, we could see some stronger demand and help us with some of our, you know, supplies, you know, work down some supplies. So, you know, that was a big question mark. It was just a matter of would we actually see them come into the market, or were they going to delay until South American crops or supplies came on board in the early part of 2024. So that's been helpful here as of late to help catch us back up. And we can talk about specifics here in just a second. The other thing that I would say is, you know, for a while we were seeing constant sales and constant shipments to Mexico. And that's been the other strong point in the U.S. export picture. So I think there's some reasons to be a little bit more optimistic than what we maybe were a couple of months ago about U.S. export potential now, given that, you know, we could see a little bit of a break in the U.S. dollar here that helps us out a little bit on the export potential. And then also just South American supply starting to dwindle, that's moving some competition, or at least making U.S. products a little bit more price competitive on the global market.
Well, detail some of what's been happening with soybeans then, as you suggested.
Sure. Yeah. So as we look at the soybean picture and what we've got kind of happening, you know, this week we had a solid week of soybean export shipments. And I want to start there on the shipment side because, you know, seasonally we do usually see a peak in shipments or inspections of physical soybeans leaving the country, usually in November, and then it just kind of starts dwindling all the way to March as that South American crop comes on board. This year, even though we had seen some positive sales, you know, our soybean pace has really deteriorated, and here in November and even in December, we were seeing very seasonably low export sales numbers. There were several weeks there where we were below even, you know, the previous 5-year marks. And that includes, you know, the trade spat there in 2018, 2019. So, you know, some very low export numbers. We've seen some better sales data, and that certainly has allowed us to pick up the pace a little bit on shipments. This year, this week, inspected 52 million bushels of soybeans. That was up from 37 million bushels the week prior. That was also above a 4-week rolling average of 50 million bushels. That gets us up a little bit to where, you know, we're still well behind the pace, but that's certainly helping us catch up. I've got it that we're seasonally down 86 million bushels from where we need to be to hit USDA's target. I'll remind folks that USDA's current target of 1.75 billion bushels is, you know, nearly 250 million bushels below what we did last year. So a lower target to start with, and then we're not even, you know, at the pace to keep up with that, or at least to maintain that. And that just, I think, really represents how poor our soybean exports have been so far this year. But as I've mentioned, we've seen some improved sales and at least here this week, some improved shipment numbers on the soybean side.
So still lagging behind. Do you think we'll catch up?
I don't think so, actually. I still have us needing to lower that soybean export number even further. Part of the reason for that is just getting started a little bit later than what we normally would. That's partially due to some logistics issues, but then also a very large South American crop and just some unfavorable economic conditions kind of plaguing the U.S. So I think we can improve, but I don't think we can catch up. So I do think that USDA will have to lower that export shipment number. However, that's just on the export side. I'm going to counter that and say that I think any reduction in exports can quickly be made up with an increase in soybean crush. And we've seen some very favorable soybean crush numbers here the last couple months. And I look for that to improve all the way through 2024.
Why is that the case? But what's using domestically the crush?
Yeah.
Or is it being exported?
Oh, well, so we're crushing soybeans, and we've seen, you know, rapid advancements in expansion of facilities to crush soybeans. A lot of companies and private sector putting, you know, investments in soybean crush facilities to increase soybean oil production. We've talked about, you know, the renewable diesel boom before, but, you know, a lot of that's being used here domestically. We've kind of priced ourselves out of the international export picture for soybean oil just because we're using it and domestic consumers are bidding that up. So, you know, it's getting used here domestically. We've seen a couple of really strong months of soybean crush numbers. I'll start just with the soybean as a whole. Soybean this for November, you know, the National Oilseed Processors Association reported that their members crushed 189 million bushels of soybeans. That was down just 800,000 bushels, or just slightly from the all-time record set in the month of October, which was, you know, just that was the first time soybean crush had exceeded 200 million bushels for the U.S. as a whole. So, you know, the expectation was that we'd see a little bit of decline in soybean crush. The trade prior to the report was expecting, you know, almost a 2 million to 3 million bushel decline in that soybean crush number, and it ended up being a lot closer to the October number than many people had anticipated. So that's good, right? Like, or at least in terms of you're a soybean producer, you like seeing those numbers. You know, for the marketing year to date, we're sitting about 22 million bushels above where we were at this time last year. If we continued to maintain this pace, that would signal that USDA would need to increase their soybeans crushed for oil and meal number even further by the time we work through the spring. The other thing I just want to point out, and we can talk more about this if you want, and I'm going through a lot of numbers here really quick, and I do apologize. I thought the soybean oil number was really interesting last week when the report came out. So soybean oil stocks, which again, you know, we would expect with large amounts of crush that we'd see soybean stocks increase, but we hadn't. We'd constantly seen decreasing soybean stocks. In fact, June was the last month where we saw, or I guess it was May into June, was the last month that we saw soybean oil stocks increase month over month. So with those large soybean crush numbers, you know, we'd expect more oil. But the other thing I want to point out is even though here in November we saw soybean stocks increase a little bit, it was also the first time since way back at the beginning part of the year that soybean stocks had increased relative to expectations, or increased more than expectations. And so what that tells me is we've been dealing with a picture here where, you know, we knew we were crushing a lot of soybeans and we were going to have a lot of oil, but oil use was kind of outpacing, or it was exceeding what we were able to crush. Here in November, it looks like maybe we finally have crushed enough soybeans that we're meeting demand, and I certainly don't think we're going to rapidly build soybean oil stocks. We've got a long ways to go just to even get back to normal, quote unquote normal soybean oil stocks. But we could be in a picture here where we see a couple of months of increasing soybean oil and putting price pressure on soybean oil prices.
It's always good to talk with you. Hope you have a great winter break.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That's Ben Brown. He is an agricultural economist with the University of Missouri, Missouri Extension, and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Russo now joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast in the growing regions across the planet. Let's start in South America. Begin in Argentina, please.
Yeah, in Argentina, the main item right now is heavy rainfall that has developed and that does pose some localized wetness risks taking place right now for planting, early crop development. It does look like as we get into the second half of this week, that heavy rainfall risk will decrease. And the pattern will ease back to something close to normal, if even a few days of a lack of rainfall across Argentina. But all in all, no significant issues are expected, and just need to see some of this heavy rainfall begin to ease for stuff to be in very good shape.
Divide Brazil into south and center west, please.
Yeah, let's start in southern Brazil, where also the pattern here is beginning to trend less active relative to what it has been. Now, granted, the past few months have been record wet across southern Brazil, especially in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. And that is now starting to change as the pattern still features a little bit of rain, but overall rainfall amounts, when adding up the next 2 weeks, it looks to register near to even slightly below normal across southern Brazil. So some of the recent retinous issues, those should be improving as we go through the next several weeks. And then up north, the story has been the heat and dryness, especially right now. The north, well, much of Brazil is in the midst of a major heat wave. There's been record temperatures in center west and northeastern Brazil, numerous high temperatures above 100 degrees Fahrenheit in recent days. And that will start to come to an end over the next several days as rainfall begins to increase across the region. That will cool down temperatures and at least provide some relief here following the heat and the recent dry bias across the region.
I'd like to pick up some of the logistical issues related to Latin America and then in the United States on the lower Mississippi River. Can you start with the Panama Canal? It's been very dry. The lake between the Atlantic and the Pacific sides is important to how high the water levels are across that canal. It's not high at this point. Is there any relief in the offing?
Bottom line, we do not see any relief here for the Panama Canal. In fact, the issues will get even worse over the next few months because Panama and Central America have now entered their dry season. And so Lake Gatun, the lake that is the main lifeblood there that feeds the Panama Canal lock system, it continues to be at record low levels and looks to stay that way going forward. And again, the next window of any potential relief or an improvement in lake water level, it's not until the start of the next rainy season, which isn't until May and June of next year.
And along the Mississippi River from southern Illinois to New Orleans, what are conditions like?
Yeah, Mississippi River system continues to be an item of note here with the very low water levels. In fact, just looking at Memphis, but this is also true across for many gauges across the Mississippi River Basin. They're at record low levels, and with a drier than normal pattern coming up over the next few weeks, no sign of any major relief there. Again, they're at record low levels. They're higher than what was the case back a few months ago, but still no sign of any turn in the pattern that would begin to rapidly increase water levels.
The Southern Plains is the active area for a crop in the United States, that hard red winter wheat crop. Can you tell me what you see there?
Yeah, we've seen an increase in precipitation over the past week's time frame in the Plains hard red winter wheat belt, even down into the Texas Panhandle, which had been one of the driest areas. And there's more rain coming up over the next few weeks. We see additional rain systems coming through. They look to be slower moving and produce abundant precipitation. So soil moisture will continue to improve here, and also a continued mild temperature pattern will be in place the next few weeks as well.
We'll talk to you in a few weeks because next week and the following week are market holidays over the winter break, and then we'll come back in January. Thank you much. We'll see you again soon.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics, joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Do visit our website, willag.org, where right now you'll find a way to register for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those are coming up in the month of January in Mount Vernon, Peoria, and DeKalb. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, again online at willag.org. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.